Startup is my new documentary film about a group of entrepreneurs and their teams working on artificial intelligence, drones, 3D printing, clean tech and biotech in Switzerland. I made this podcast to introduce the founders of the startups in the film. So these interviews took place behind the scenes and they won't be in the documentary. In this episode, I'm speaking with Ning Chao, co-founder of AI Cortex.
So I'm Ning Chao, and I'm co-founder and CEO of this company. So the company name is AI Cortex, and we are focusing on neuromorphic engineering, trying to bring neuromorphic technology to daily life.
How do you explain what neuromorphic technology is?
Yeah, so be honest, for me, once we talk with people, what is neuromorphic? Although you know, right, we are talking with lots of investors in China and also in Europe and the US, we don't see neuromorphic even. We just see it's edge computing. It's one technology we can use on the edge for ultra low power for real-time sensory processing. Yeah, this is what it can do. Yeah, because once we talk about this is the brain inspired, the feeling to bring to people is more like this is unreal, or this is too new, or not that real to be a technology to be ready for daily life. Yeah, so we don't want to make people nervous so that we don't see neuromorphic that much recent days. Yeah.
How is edge computing different from cloud computing?
Yes, especially the new AI companies, they're more focusing on the AI chips for cloud computing, right? So they collect the data with the 5G or some other solution, and then on the cloud, there's a big computer or big server they can run on real time to help you to solve the real problem. Yeah, but actually the daily life, maybe people believe that won't be pure cloud, because if you look at the human, right, we are only edge computing, right? We never send our data to cloud, right? But people, they're working profit, right? So they can imagine for cars, for drones, for robots, all this thing. So first of all, for cars and the drones, they need a real time. So the real time means the short latency for the sensory processing. If you send it to cloud, you will need to wake up the data, you wake up the 5G transferring, right, to send the data to cloud. And then on the cloud, you need to process it. And then maybe the loop will going to be something like 100 milliseconds longer. So that won't be enough, short enough for some special applications. For example, if the drone is flying, trying to do some object avoiding, right, or for the car, once the car is driving, and you want to do some emergent brake system, or try to tune your wheel once something happening in front of the car, just in a short period, something like 5 to 10 millisecond distance. So that's very strict, and that's only can be sold on the edge. Another thing is, of course, once you send it to cloud, also it's not reliable, right? Because if the car is moving to some place that's no internet, they're going to crash if something they cannot do on real time. Yeah, another is something for robots, right? You can imagine, currently, of course, the robots on the desk, you know, on our daily life is not a real robot. It's just something. Most of the robots, I'm not talking about some fancy technology in US. Most of the robots, in our daily life, in hotel, especially hotels and the government in China, or some airport in China, it's more like a moving stuff with the screen, right? Yeah, it's not a real robot. But what I'm seeing is some more like a human robot, you know, with hundreds, even thousands sensors on the body. They all want to they want to do some sensory processing in real time. All this big data, actually, you cannot easily send all this vision, auditory, touching, all this sensory information to cloud to do real-time processing. It's better, actually, we do pre-processing on the edge. So that's a huge market, actually. So there are already some robots companies trying to reach us, trying to see whether it's possible to use technology to move to the robots to see, to do some real-time vision processing, also the touch, also the auditory processing with ultra-low power, especially ultra-low power, right? So if especially once you compare with the current solution, you move everything to cloud, it's going to burn less power. But our technology mainly is burning, we call it sub-milliwatt, right? So it means with a common battery, you can drive it for months and even yearly. So that's something really a big improvement, right? So I think I still remember, so that was one robot company, big one in China. They were doing some like a vision processing to use the robot to read something or to recognize something, you know. If people come in, they say, hey, dad, mom, something like this, it's easy task. But for them, actually, in order to do this, it's kind of impossible. They have to plug in the power. All these robots has to stay on the power station. Because for this kind of vision, they're running on the normal camera, and it's burning walls, actually. So they can not easily, with a mobile battery to drive it. So this, so for us, it's kind of easy, actually. So we can easily make a small thing on the device and keep it move, even a cup, right? Even anything, actually, in the future, I can imagine we can move this stuff to all the devices in the room to make everything to be able to interact with the human. Yeah, so I think this is something, a big step, a big jump, actually.
Okay, and what are applications for neuromorphic chips?
Yeah, so this is really perfect for real-time sensory processing, something like for natural signal processing, like speech command detection, and some ultra-low power, let's say for the monitor you can put on the machine to real-time monitoring whether the machine is working perfectly or not with ultra-low power, or something like a body signal monitoring. So we can wear this stuff to real-time monitoring this heart rate or heart signal to see whether the people is healthy or not. For this kind of monitoring, it's normally the current existing technology. Normally, they cannot make it with a battery to drive it for weeks or for a longer time. But it's very possible for this kind of technology to be wearable for, let's see, 1 month or even longer time. So this is something special. So we are seeing this is a perfect technology to follow the traditional deep learning for we call the third generation AI technology, so that we can use this for on the edge for this kind of small signal processing for a long time. And another direction actually is for auditory vision processing. We call it dynamic vision processing. Yeah, this is also special because it's not like the normal vision based on frame, based on our current existing camera, you know, frame by frame. Our current web camera, maybe we have the number like 30 frames per second, but this kind of vision system, what we are developing now, so later probably we can see some demo on the desk with our existing system. So the eye inside is not like the normal camera. It's more like the real eye. It's not based on frame, but based on the pixel events. Yeah. So also the processor inside the system is not like the normal deep learning for frame-based processing, but more like pixel-level processing. So by doing that, so we can do the vision processing with ultra-low power. So something like in the room, if we want to do some gesture recognition or body gesture or human presence detection, we can really use the coin battery to drive it for months. That is impossible for current technology, but it's possible for this kind of technology. Yeah.
What was your journey into founding your own startup and the beginnings of the company?
I'd like to start the story start from when I joined this institute. So I did my PhD in China, Chinese Academy of Sciences. And after that, I was watching to try to look for a new position, actually, in Europe. Because I was in China, it's very crowded, and more like a place to be more calm down, to have time to read and to learn more. And that time, neuromorphic was very new also in Europe, actually. So it's just a start. And some groups are doing big hardware or big chips for mimicking the brain. So that's what it is.
And when was that?
That was 2012. Yeah. So and then I met Giacomo in Capcaccia, his workshop. This is one of this famous neuromorphic workshop, one of that actually. Another one is in Telluride. So I met him there and was asking Giacomo whether there was a position. And fortunately, he said yes. And he left some question to me actually to answer. So, and I think I was lucky. So I got the position and then joined Giacomo's group. Because for me, neuromorphic is very new, but it's very interesting. And I see I saw the potential actually for that at that time, for the future. And but before that, actually, I was doing the normal traditional hardware, like SRAM FPGA thing. And I was a traditional mixed signal circuit designer. So for me, it's also very new. Actually, it's difficult for me also. So starting from the first year, I joined INI, this institute. The institute is the first joint institute between University of Zurich and ETH Zurich. It's the first one, actually. It started from 1995. And Giacomo also was the very, that time, he joined the second year, 1996, he joined the institute with his colleagues. And now currently he's the director of the institute. So he's also on the good position, right? So, but anyway, for me, it's very new and it's difficult. And I was trying to understand what that. But it's very difficult. So even during the lab meetings, the group meetings, all the meeting together with some other colleagues in the institute, it's very challenging for me. So I don't understand what they're seeing. One thing is because my English is not that level. And I don't know, also, I'm not professional in neuromorphic at that time. So especially once we're sitting with some other scientists, they are talking about neuroscience and the neural network, neural models, different things. So for me, it's really challenging. But fortunately, I was focusing on hardware development. So I did several chips. So start from 2012, I was working on the Rose chip. So it's something like, it's also, I think at that time, it's also very advanced hardware. INI started doing that. It's a Europe project, EU project. And fortunately, we did it and it worked. And then we started doing some other chip to make a bigger scale. You know, that time, the first chip was just a single one. It cannot scale up. We know our brain is more like a bigger size. Also, for each block, maybe the architecture is kind of similar, right? So it's very natural for people to think, you know, the problem maybe if we can make small chips, but if it's easier to make it scale up, right, bigger system, it's going to be interesting. So that time, in 2014, we focused on this multi-chip solution to make multi-cores and multi-chips, and to on the chip level, on the system level, try to integrate it. Yeah, so that we did another chip we called Dynamic SE. Yeah, so we made it actually on the desk. You can still see that, especially in INI, there are a lot of students, they are using that for experiments. Yeah, so that was a successful project. And then started from 2016, we did another one, trying to merge the existing two chip together. And that was another big project we called New RAM 3. With ST Microelectronics. So that one is trying to merge two chips together and still make it scalable, but with advanced technology. It's a 22 nanometer process and it's a mixed signal. So it's kind of very advanced mixed signal circuit inside with ultra low power and scalable to mimic the brain, right? So it's fantastic. But in 2017, once we got the chip back, actually, AI was also hot at the time. So all people that are talking about AI, especially for us, actually, it's kind of interesting. It's something strange, actually, because people, they question you. So the AI they're talking about is about deep learning, right? It's not neuromorphic. And the neuromorphic, you are seeing the neuromorphic is more mimic the brain, right? It's from the brain study. You are trying to make the chip work like the brain, then what is the function, right? So where is the application for that? So actually at that time, we don't have any application, no application using the technology. It's just something on the desk, and it's just something you know, its general purpose, we're trying to help the scientists actually to understand how the brain works. So they guess there might be some network in running in your brain, right? You try to mimic it in the hardware, try to see whether the network works or not. But it's not serving the purpose. It's not trying to do gesture, or do some body, or do the speech command, do nothing, basically. So all the existing AI companies are all doing machine learning, doing deep learning thing. Yeah. So yeah, that's why actually we think about to start a company. We want to bring this one to real life and try to start to think about the problem, start from another direction. So before that, we all doing more like a mimic brain, start to reverse engineering the brain, right? So now it's another direction, try to start from the project, the problem first, and try to understand what people need. And then we, maybe it's a gesture recognition, or maybe it's a speech command, or body signal monitoring. And then we try to use the technology to fix the problem. Yeah, that's another direction. So that's also make us more advanced compared with some other startups in this direction. So in March of 2017, we started the company with Giacomo Indori and try to together with INI. So INI is still working on the basic research, but the company is more for applications, for industrial applications. Yeah, so this is the whole story.
Mm-hmm. And why did you start in Switzerland?
Yes, so I have to say Switzerland is really a perfect place to start the new technology. You know, there are three top level universities here, right? So every day there are lots of new ideas coming out. So so first of all, it's really a nice place, and for sure you always see actually lots new technology that are coming out from these universities or institutes. And for us it's the same, right? So especially the very beginning, there are lots of people interested in investing in this kind of new technology. So also the human resources is very rich. Right. So once you start a company, you want to get perfect talent engineers to join to start the technology. It's very easy because the new PhD students, they finish the position in university, they're willing to join to start the new technology. Right. Also, some other people working outside Switzerland in Europe, they're willing to join Switzerland because here is more stable and more richer, you know, for the higher salary. And a better environment for research, so they're willing to join this thing. So I would say for startup, it's perfect.
Okay, and what is not so perfect?
Yeah, so this is a very direct question, actually. So once the company want to grow to a bigger size, you know, for us, we're trying to get rid out of this label, startup, the label. That's going to be difficult, especially once you look at the history, right? Not just recently. So if you look at try to look for some big companies, some new big companies who is using the new technology, something like AI companies, actually it's difficult because there's no environment, investment environment. So the ticket size for investment is very little. So normally people are talking about here is something like 150K or 1 million, less than 1 million. So once you want to have more than 1 million investment, it's very difficult, right? For most of these startups, it's difficult. Another is for market, right? So there's no big market because the size, the people size is too little. And also the new technology, once you want to merge, the merge technology, once you want to bring it to the market, the very few big company can use it. Some big company like IoT company, like what we know from Switzerland is more like the old one, already started several, let's say 10 years, even longer years ago, right? So they're already big and stable. They're not that willing actually to use new technology, like something like, So I don't know what, but I'm talking about comparing with some other new tech company, right? It's not eager actually to use the new technology from startup because the startup normally they cannot supply very stable and reliable solution for them. Of course, I can understand, right? So they have to select the best solution, which is cheap and which is stable and with high yield, right? So for them, easier to control. But for startup is difficult because startup is more like, if this year can take some number from us, it's better, right? If we can have some market. But unfortunately, it's not that situation. So, yeah, so market and investment environment is not that good.
How did you learn to be an entrepreneur?
Yeah, so for me, I'm a pure engineer. So I still a kind of engineer. I was trying to switch myself, right? Start from last year. I was trying to learn and get trained to understand how the company works and how the investment works, right? How we get the fundraising and how we manage the team, all these things, and how to do the marketing, and especially how to bring technology to a product. This is very difficult, to be honest. Already, I feel lost pressure already. So it's not something like you just tape out a chip in the lab, right? Test it and publish paper. That's easy, actually. But if you want to bring the technology to make a million of this chip and still make it stable and make it work, in each chip and make a high yield, and guarantee this works for your customer, and the customer can easily take it and to their product. That's a big challenge, actually. So I was trying to learn. But still, for myself, the very beginning, of course, I don't know that. So the very beginning, the investment, I just some, for them, Baidu. But the venture came to us saying, hey, we want to invest in you. I was happy. I never, before that, I didn't talk with some other investors. And after this round, I didn't talk with some other investor within 1 year. So basically, I was just happy to take the money and without talking about the value of the company that much. But the number, of course, is something like $1.5 million. It's kind of good to start. So everyone was happy at that time. Yeah. So, yeah. But anyway, I think we're kind of lucky because anyway, Baidu Venture is a good investor for us, right? They're big and they have a nice view for how to bring the technology to the market. They're helping us a lot for that, yeah.
And how was your experience dealing with investors?
Once we do the investment, and I told you, we just take the money. But after several months, we feel like, no, this is something we have to be careful because once we have a bigger team, something like more than 10 people, of course, it's not big compared with the big companies. But for us, we can easily calculate the burn rate. Right? We can easily see the money in our account is going down very quickly. Right? So this is something we have to be careful. So first of all, we cannot, just as we imagine, we grow the team as fast as possible. Also the investment, we have to be careful. We have to see when we should take a new money in and how fast we will be able to bring the thing to market to get profit and to make the company work, right? Otherwise, the company cannot always take investment and will die in the future if we don't have any products. So that's something we need to be careful, right? So that nervous me a little bit at that time. And what really nervous me actually, once we started this round of investment, we have been running this actually already for almost 1 year, to be honest. So last year this time, I was starting to talk with some investor in China already. So some people came to us, saying they might be interested in technology, they want to know something about this. And we were doing some pitch, showing some slides to them. And that time actually we realized, no, it's something not as what we were thinking about, because investors, especially investors, they're more interested in is what you can create to the market. It's not something in the lab, it's something like what they can sell as a product, right? And when, and how much they can earn by invest money in, right? So this is a really direct and serious question, right? So, and that time I feel like it's distance between us and the investor, actually. So we're trying to tune the slides and trying to really make a plan, so a more clear plan, so to try to explain them, this is not a research plan, it's a business plan. But to be honest, still the very beginning, the first half year, basically, this is still pure research plan. There's no business because we don't know business. We don't know which customer is going to be our customer, and who is going to take technology, and how much we're going to earn by selling this. Right? This is a question from investor, and normally investors will tell us, hey, it's cool technology, but we won't invest because we don't know when you're going to make money. Yeah. So this is so force us to learn and try to convert ourselves to be more, especially myself, to be more like a real CEO, not a CTO, but a CEO. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And how did you learn to be the CEO of your startup?
Yeah. So, most from investors and customers. So to be honest, during the last year, we have been talking with around 100 investors, most of them in China, and some of them in US, and some of them in Europe. Yeah, so this is easily to be understand, right? Because in China, the investors are more active, and they're more willing to invest in new technology, so they're more from China, but still, they also real, right? They don't want to put money to some technology. You see, maybe in 5 years and 10 years, that won't work for them. So they're more willing to do investment for some technology. It's better to be 1 year, but if you see 1 to 3 years, maybe, right? But still, it's a challenge for them. Yeah, so most of the knowledge actually is by talking with all these hundreds of investors, we try to get the knowledge, you know, what we should do, and where we should go for the company. This is the direct the learning from the investors. Actually, investors are trying to teach us how to do that. And part of them actually I was trying to learn from, read some book, you know, try to take some courses, also try to on the web, you know, on the internet to try to learn. So basically try to get some basic knowledge what we should do for the company. Yeah, some actually so from the daily management of the team. So I feel like I need to learn, I need to tune myself, also need, you know, I need to teach my team where we should go and why we should do that and which direction. So why we make this decision. So what's the reason for that? Try to explain them, because I'm pure researcher. Also, they are pure researchers, actually. So difficult for the company. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Do you think your education prepared you for running a startup, or are there knowledge gaps?
That's a huge gap. Before we register a company, I never think about it, to restart a company, actually. Yeah, just something like, you know, in 2017, early 2017, we were thinking to bring this to market. But what we will bring to the market, we don't know, actually. Yeah, even the first seed round investor, they came to us, hey, I feel this technology is cool. We want to invest this one for body signal monitoring. You see, yes, this might be the direction. So we should go for that. Then we take the money, and we do some research on that, and see whether it's possible or not to do this body signal monitoring. That was that time. But still, you know, this project is still going on. I mean, start from that's 2 years ago, right? So it's really, the company now is really driven by the market. It's not we have to see. Okay, so for the first year. For vision is the first task, and for body signal and for speech is more for 2-3 years market. It's not for now. So we have much clearer understanding of what is the market and what is the plan for us also. Yeah, so it's very difficult. There's no background from my side, no preparing from my side, be honest. Yeah, so it's very challenging.
What kind of advice would you have for someone who wants to found their own startup?
Yes, so I think first of all, we really should start from the real problem. Yeah, not just the interest, not just the, you know, for researcher, we always think that our solution is the best, right? Because we publish a paper, we write numbers, the specs, you know, in this paper, we always mention this is the best solution, right? In existing solutions. But actually, we never really open our eye to look into existing solutions in the market. What is there existing already, right? So I think that basically there are two cases. One is not existing yet, so something pure new. So you have a big chance, right? You can. This is no one doing that before, and then no solution before. So you have a pure, perfect solution. You can easily bring to market within 1 year or several years, and you can see. There's huge potential. You can do that easily. So that's I really see. Yes, please do that. That's really you're creating lots of value for the future, for people, for human, right? So that's a good thing for us. And for something actually is already existing some solution. So that's something you need to be careful because so if your solution is not something like 100 or 10 times or 100 times better than existing solution, I mean the cost. And the power consumption, maybe if it's cheap, right? And if it's the performance is not 100 times or at least 10 times better, it's going to be difficult because you want to make this better to be ready to the market. You need some time, right? During this time window, maybe some other solution already is existing. And also for existing solutions, you want to get it out, right? Plug in yourself stuff is very challenging. Yeah, you have to convince people. To do that, that's going to take energy. Yeah, that's if you don't have enough a good enough thing to show to the customer, they won't do that easily. So that's something. Yeah. So I would say start from the market to guide yourself to try to really judge your technology whether it worth do that or not.
If you could go back in time, you know, a few years, what would you do differently?
I think we are lucky actually till now, right? So everything is going smooth, especially first of all, we have a really fantastic team and everyone is really take this as a platform. They can realize their dream. You know, everyone come here for NeuMorphic, trying to bring NeuMorphic to real daily life, right? So it's not research. This is their dream actually. So this is a good thing for us. And another is that we get the investment, you know, all these investors, they have similar understanding of technology with us. And they're trying to also bring this to the real market and trying to also use their resource to help us to push it to the market. Yes, I think we are kind of lucky. So I cannot say what we should do if we go back. It's more like, you know, yeah, so if we really go back, then I will say I should, before we started coming, maybe I take some training, you know, and or before we do this round investment, I should start to look into the market more and try to understand what they want. And then probably this round investment maybe is easier, right? So otherwise, now you see it's already half a year, it's already 1 year actually, so it's still not closed yet. Yeah, it's very difficult. Yeah.
And how do you deal with these stressful situations?
Yeah, so to be honest, I have a really big heart. I never feel nervous, or a little bit sometimes. For example, this interview may at the very beginning make me a bit nervous, but be honest, it's difficult to make me nervous. The reason is because, you know, once we I got trained actually for this thing because once we did the chip design, you know, for AI for this hardware, we developed it in INI in the institute. There always something like we call it deadline. Yeah, that was a day you have to send out your design, and after that it's not possible to tape out for the chip development. So you have to finish the thing that time. Right, this is a. Special for SE design. So, you know, always, I told you, normally, I spent at least a half a year focusing on this kind of chip development in each year, right? So, especially once you close the deadline, you have to make sure the chip works. And you run all the simulations and you trust yourself, and the chip you make sure. Otherwise, you can imagine if you tip out it, and after 3 months you get back the chip. If any transistor inside doesn't work, it means you failed, right? So you spend half a year, and everyone is looking for that, and you have to say, I'm sorry, so it doesn't work. We all waste half a year. So this is something. Also, you know, the tape out is not cheap, right? So this is one thing to judge whether the designer is valuable or not. It's like how much money they spend during their life for taping out the chip. You know, how many tape outs they have, how much money they spend already. I mean, it's very normal, I think, for some designer, they spend more than several millions, even $10 million to just run to tape out the chips. Yeah, so this is always spending big money and have to guarantee it works that time and have to tape out, especially sometimes, you know, if you cannot finish it, they have to run more than 20 hours per day, maybe just without sleep, even try to make it work and then tape out on time. So I will not be nervous for that. Yeah, another thing is I also get help from the team. You know, they all trying to work perfect 100% for the company. So that also calmed me down. So I trust there must be a solution, right? So there won't be something bad. So as soon as we all work hard 100% or even 120% hard, so we will get a good result. So that always like that, at least for me. So that also is something I think is my role in my life. So as soon as I work 100% focus on something, that must be a good result. Yeah, so.
Where do you see yourself in maybe 5 to 10 years?
We're really, really willing to push it, really to make it a bigger success in the future. So we always, you see the joke is our dream is really to create a company more like Intel, but focusing on edge computing, because the other existing companies all focusing on cloud, right? So we are the one have a key technology, very possible to bring to the edge computing. So we really have the willing actually to create a big company focusing on edge, and not only limited by neuromorphic technology, but try to also bring some other new technology, some other new sensor technology, some other new processing edge computing technology together based on neuromorphic, and try to merge everything together to bring the perfect technology to the market. So if you see 10 years, so maybe the company, hopefully it's going to be another Intel. Yeah.
Startup and this podcast is produced by 8th Grade Story-Driven Science and by me, Manuel Staggers. Startup is supported by the Gebhard Rüff Stiftung as part of the Scientainment program. Additional support from the Ernst Göhner Stiftung, Kultur Wetzikon and the Canton of Valais. Visit the film website www.startup-documentary.com for more interviews like this one and for more information about the film, trailers and showtimes.